Let's go Nuggets! Good evening, Nuggets Nation, and welcome to the newest episode of the Nuggets Serbia podcast. Tonight with me is, as always, my uncle from another mother, Miroslav Čuk from Pančevo. Hello, Miroslav.
Good evening, good day to you.
And I'm Mislav Čuk, from currently on Ugljan Island in Croatia. So today we have a special guest, although I think we always have special guests, but today's guest is extra special. So Mike Singer is here with us, and if you are watching us from Germany, sorry, unfortunately it's not the German pop star Mike Singer, he's the Nuggets beat writer from Denver Post. Mike Singer, welcome. Mike,
thank you guys so much for having me. No, I'm not the German pop star Mike Singer, but I am thrilled to be here. I think this project that you guys do is so cool. I love it, and I'm thrilled to get into it. Let's do it.
Great. Appreciate the kind words. So first, can you tell us about yourself? How did you become an NBA reporter?
Well, I went to school. I went to college for journalism, and I always loved sports. And I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, so I grew up watching the LeBron teams. I got to cover some Cavs teams when I was growing up. And then I moved to Chicago. I got to cover some Bulls teams and some of those playoff runs. And then in 2015, I worked for USA Today for about 4 years, and I kind of built, worked my way up there, became our NBA editor, our national NBA editor. And then the Denver Post had an opening for a beat writing job covering the Nuggets. I obviously knew about Nikola. I knew the team was on the ascent and they were exciting. Denver's a great place to be. So I moved from Chicago to Denver 3 seasons ago. This is my 3rd year on the beat. I was actually just thinking about this. I've had 1.5 seasons of normal NBA coverage and 1.5 seasons of coronavirus coverage. I think that's a good ratio. So it's been a wild 3 years. I will say that this first season that I got here was the first year that Nikola Jokic made the playoffs. So I think that there's a linear connection there. And, and now we're here, about 2 weeks, 3 weeks away from the playoffs this season, crazy season. So yeah, that's kind of the story.
You used to cover the Chicago Bulls, and Chicago Bulls are kind of close to hearts in Serbia because of the big, large Serbian population in Chicago, also Croatian population in Chicago. Can you compare the two fan bases and the franchises as well between Denver and Chicago?
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely right. Like, when the Nuggets go to Chicago, there are more Serbian fans than I've ever seen in any other city. I think it's Chicago. I actually think we were in Cleveland 2 seasons ago, and there was Serbian Heritage Night that they paired with the Nuggets coming there as well. So that was really fun. I don't know if you guys remember the video of Nikola singing and dancing with some of the fans, with like hundreds of Serbian fans and a lot of flags there. So that was awesome. I kind of just think it's the story of, how international the NBA has become. And Nikola Jokic, a 41st pick overall, and everyone has followed his story. He's become an MVP front runner, one of the best players in the league, and people take a lot of pride in that. So I have definitely, from your guys' tweets, from a lot of Serbian fans who follow me on Twitter, like, there is definitely a lot of energy and passion. That part is very noticeable. You know, and in Chicago, there was a lot of energy too, but I wasn't there, you know, covering it from a Bulls perspective, obviously when Nikola got there. I've only been paying close attention with the Nuggets, with this run with Nikola, so I can only speak to you guys, really, and it is a very fervent and strong and passionate fan base.
Can you tell us, is Karnišovas trying to build Nuggets 2.0 or Chicago Nuggets there?
Yeah. So at the trade deadline, when AK traded for Nikola Vucevic, I sent Arturis Karnišovas a text message and I said, what, you think you can only win with a center named Nikola? And and he loved that. And I also texted him and I said, Arturis, it's a little funny that both you and Tim Connolly, the Nuggets president, decided to trade with Orlando. And AK texted me back. He's like, what can I say? We both like similar style players. And to me, they're just, they're obviously on the same wavelength. They're kind of looking for obviously facilitator from down low. That's what Vooch is and was for the Orlando Magic, will be for the Chicago Bulls moving forward for a few more seasons. And yeah, the parallels, like, you can't ignore them. Arturis loved Nikola. He loved the unselfishness, loved the way he played. Like, they still maintain a friendship. So, you know, I'm not surprised at all that he went out and got, you know, an all-star caliber center to pair with Zach LaVine. Yes, I would call them the Nuggets of the East.
And how much confidence do you have in Chicago moving forward with those two? Do you think they can make a big push next season?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't looked at the East standings for a few days, but I believe the Bulls are in the thick of it for the play-in series. So I think Zach LaVine has obviously made the leap. He's an all-star this year. He's one of the best scorers in the entire NBA. And you pair him with kind of another guy, you know, just kind of, you have your backcourt set. Now you have your front court set, your two anchors. I think that there's a lot to work with there. They need to figure out what's going on with Lauri Markkanen and figure out Kobe White, what they have with them. But Arturis is building. And, you know, I don't think anybody should be surprised that in the first season under Arturis, he is kind of reestablishing the culture there and making it a winning culture. They are prioritizing winning and prioritizing making the playoffs. And, you know, some people with the Bulls were like, I don't know if Vooch is necessarily like a great play for the future, just given that I think he's 29 or 30 years old. But to me, that's an indication that Arturis just wants to win and set the precedent that we expect to win in Chicago. So I think that's what he's doing there.
There is a conspiracy theory that Karnišovas will try to pry away Nikola Jokic when he is a free agent, you know, because he has connections with Karnišovas, he has connections with Chicago. Oh, yeah, we have even the meme about conspiracy theories. And, of course, a large Serbian base. Do you see anything in that?
I would be stunned if that happened. I think Arturis is completely a professional. I wouldn't expect anything shady to be going on. And from all indications, Nikola has said that he, you know, enjoys being in Denver. And he talks about Tim Duncan. He talks about Dirk Nowitzki. He talks about the guys that have made their legacy with one team. And just the way that Nikola is built and kind of his demeanor, I don't expect him to go looking around. Like, the Nuggets made the Aaron Gordon trade this year in an effort to appease Nikola Jokic and say, we are doing everything we can during your MVP season to make life easier for you. We are going to go all in and maximize this window. And there's no way that Nikola doesn't appreciate it. I mean, Aaron Gordon is going to make everybody's life easier defensively. Can probably now be the third or fourth option offensively, given all the injuries. But, like, the Nuggets are trying. They are trying to do everything they can to maximize Jokic. And, you know, frankly, the Nuggets are very – they don't want to take for granted what Nikola Jokic is doing. And by that I mean he is such an easy superstar. He is such an easy person to work with and who works hard and doesn't, like, you know, ruffle any feathers and he's just a very good leader, as we've seen this year. And So they almost don't want to take for granted how special this time is. That's how the Nuggets view this. They recognize everything that Nikola has done for them has lifted them up, and they're kind of just doing everything they can to appease him. So I'm not going to buy into your conspiracy theory right now, and you know, we'll leave it at that. I'm pretty confident that Nikola enjoys being in Denver. I expect him to be here for a long time.
It's not mine. It was spinning in, around my inner circles. I just wanted to...
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, what you're saying. So even signing of Campazzo, like he had many more NBA teams looking for him, wanting to sign him, and he chose Denver Nuggets for a reason. That's the great culture in Denver. So
And in hindsight, how great of a signing was Campazzo to be your third point guard, and now he's just... You know, lifting your team for the final stretch of the seasons without Monte and Jamal.
Right. You know, this was one of the reasons why they went out and got Campazzo. They loved his energy, his playmaking, how hard he plays. There is a thorough line through every guy that the Nuggets get. They are overlooked. They are underappreciated. Not every guy, but a lot of guys. They really pride themselves on finding guys who have chips on their shoulder. I think that Facundo Campazzo is the oldest undrafted rookie in NBA history. I believe that that's the case. He is now a 30-year-old rookie in the NBA, and basically the Nuggets loved that he was building his entire career at Real Madrid, trying to get an opportunity to play in the NBA. He played well in the Olympics, played well in the World Cup, and the Nuggets saw him as a guy, an elite playmaker who has a really high basketball IQ who they can pair with Nikola Jokic. And that was part of the reason Tim Connelly and the Nuggets front office went out and got Facundo Campazzo. And on Campazzo's part, he wanted a winning environment. He knew that he was going to have to scrap for minutes and scrap for playing time in Denver because they had such a loaded team, specifically in the backcourt. But with these injuries, we have seen how valuable he was. I'll be honest. I was skeptical when Campazzo, throughout his first month of the season, like Malone didn't necessarily know how to use him. He was putting him in the corner, playing him off ball. And I think Campazzo was still trying to prove himself that he could be in the NBA. But at this point, the other night, career high 13 assists. He's a constantly a defensive pest against every like all-star guard that he goes up against. And I'm not saying he stops them by any means. I don't think anybody stops the Stephs or the Jaws or Damian Lillard, but he irritates them. And sometimes that's the best you can hope for, is just to irritate them and frustrate these guys, especially when you don't have very many point guard options to begin with. So yes, in hindsight, hell of a signing. And it just keeps looking better day by day.
Yeah. You never see players like, let's say, Gary Harris or somebody else, that Steph Curry gets irritated by him, that he needs to like put him down with some words or something. But almost every game, opposing point guard needs to get into verbal fight with Campazzo, and that just shows his value. Yeah.
You know, the funny thing about Gary is that Gary was a fantastic defender, no doubt about that, but he was not a very good ball handler. He did not have a good handle on his dribble. He wasn't a good initiator. He couldn't facilitate. He couldn't play a Will Barton role and bring the ball up and create. And so, again, you wanted to pair guys in the backcourt with alongside Jamal that could bring the ball up and create and facilitate. And that's Campazzo. That is a PJ Dozier. That's Will Barton, Monte Morris. Though that's what the Nuggets were looking for. They wanted to try to alleviate pressure on Jamal, because he already had so much pressure on him when he's coming around screens and hunting for shots. So they actively tried to get Jamal off the ball. And, you know, before Jamal got hurt, they were pairing Campazzo with Jamal, and it was working. Like, basically, you try to relieve the pressure on Jamal and just give it to somebody who can make plays for others. And Campazzo's not a score-first point guard like Jamal. Jamal, I always thought, was more of a shooting guard anyways, if we're just calling him a hybrid guard. But yes, I think Campazzo was fantastic. And I think, you know, his energy and the fact that he is such a fighter, has really had a kind of an infectious impact on the rest of the team when they've just been going through so many ups and downs this season, and a season unlike no other.
Yeah. And he's not hitting that rookie ball. because he's 30 years old. But I think Pablo Prigioni was like 35-year-old rookie, but I'm not sure was he drafted or just signed as a free agent.
I think somebody told when I remember when I wrote this story, I looked it up on Capazzo in the preseason, and I was told that he was the oldest undrafted free agent. Is Prigioni, by the way, is he with Minnesota at this point? Do you know where he is?
Question.
Playing or he?
No, not playing. I think he's on it. There was another Argentinian connection that I can't remember who it was, but that was one of the teams associated with Campazzo in the offseason. I forget who it was. It was Minnesota, but I don't remember who's on their coaching staff. But somebody, that was one of the connections, like, uh-oh, do we need to worry about Minnesota? Part of the reason Campazzo wanted to come to Denver was because Denver is a winning organization, a team that's on the ascent, and Campazzo wants to win. And that was absolutely one of the factors in him coming here.
Yeah. When you come from Real Madrid, like you got used to winning titles. And then if you come to NBA just to be like a second or third point guard on a losing team, it doesn't make sense, especially when Campazzo is basically like breaking even with his salary because he had to pay some money to Real Madrid to let him go.
That's an underreported aspect of the Campazzo story is how little money he is making this year just to make his NBA dream happen. There was definitely some buyout like obstacles that they needed to overcome for him to get here. And he, like, I don't think he was getting paid a lot of money last season with Real Madrid in order to facilitate his buyout to come here. This is very much just like a blue collar story of a guy who is just dying to play in the NBA. And that's why he's like, he has nothing to lose. He fought for so long to get here. And now he's here and you know, he's going to basically leave a floor burn on every single court that he plays on.
One thing I've read from several different former NBA players from Europe, the biggest cultural shock in the NBA when the player comes from across the pond is the thing that there is like 10 teams every season with no goals at all, or with no goals for the second half of the season anyway. And they're just used to getting loss after loss, which is something that's completely unacceptable in Europe because you get relegated. If you're too bad, you're going to the Segunda, you're going to the second league, and you're not staying at the elite. And that's a really big cultural shock. And also one thing that really hurts, you know, psyche of these players, because they're used to be winners, because they used to be the best players of Europe. And now they come to, I don't know, sorry for this, to Cleveland. and just play for a 20 wins team.
That's super interesting. I hadn't heard that. But yeah, the idea of quote unquote tanking or trying to get a higher draft pick probably doesn't land well with competitive guys who are coming over from Europe. So that's very interesting. Again, one of the reasons Campazzo didn't want to go to Minnesota, didn't want to go to a different team that was lottery bound, even if he would have been destined for a bigger role, like that he knew he was going to have to fight for a role with the Nuggets, whereas there were other teams who he had a role carved out already. And that's part of the reason, you know, he wanted to come here and he's been so embraced. Like Michael Malone is a former point guard, a scrappy guy, you know, feisty. And I've never asked Malone this, but I think that he sees some of himself in Facu Campazzo and how he plays. And that's why he's such a big fan of his. So maybe that's a future story. But Campazzo has, in my opinion, been an absolute positive impact player so far this year.
I remember when we were complaining, why do we have 4 point guards on the team? Like, and even like Monte Morris was like about to end his contract, and we were all thinking he will get traded for sure. We cannot guarantee him like the starting position. We cannot guarantee him enough money that he could attract on the open market. And here we are.
Oh. I can just tell you, the Nuggets love Monte. They had no intentions of ever losing him. And there have been other teams that have called the Nuggets about Monte. and they never listened. Like, they knew how valuable Monte Morris was as a backup point guard, and a starting caliber point guard. He is good enough to be a starting caliber point guard. Unfortunately, you know, this latest hamstring injury has taken him out of the lineup for the time being. But I mean, there are a few better contracts right now on the Nuggets, 3 years for $27 million, than Monte Morris, given how much responsibility he is now going to have going into next season without Jamal Murray as he rehabs his ACL. So I'm a big fan of Monte the person. I think he's a really good player. I think that he kind of maximizes his value. Again, the guy, a 51st pick overall, a guy who was overlooked. Like, the Nuggets find these guys who are good people first, and then if you have basketball talent, then they will consider you. And, like, I cannot tell you the rave reviews about Monte. Everybody calls him the Pied Piper. He's friends with everybody. Everyone around the league likes Monte. And he's just a great locker room fit. I'm not shocked at all that he wound up in Denver.
A couple of months ago, we had the former Boston Celtic Dino Radja, the Hall of Famer Dino Radja, on our show. And we asked him about the drafting habits of NBA teams. And he was all about, why are all these teams trying to bet on projects, on 18-year-olds, when you literally have 22-year-old guys with significant experience playing and high skill playing, like Monte Morris. Monte Morris was right. No accident. He was the best turnover to assist ratio guy in the history of the NCAA. So what are we talking about at 51? That's a steal. That's really that should be drafted earlier.
I'll tell you that the Nuggets, especially under Tim Connelly, have this philosophy of, why not focus on things that a potential player can do rather than what he can't do? Because if their focus was what a player can't do, Nikola Jokic is not going to Denver. Like, if we focused on his athletic limitations, his size, that he can't run very fast. If we focus on those things, then he's not going to be an NBA fit. But it's not that they ignore those things, but it's that they emphasize the positives. What can Monte do? He can run his team. He competes. He doesn't turn the ball over. He puts guys in good positions. A good teammate, is beloved by, you know, where he was at Iowa State. So they focus. They're not scared away by limitations. If you look at Campazzo, if they were scared of limitations, they wouldn't have brought on a 5'10" guy who plays hard as all hell. So I just love, they're like the island of miscast toys. They got Nikola Jokic, they got Faku, they got all these like bizarre dynamic players. Who knows what position Aaron Gordon plays? Is he a 3 or a 4? He can guard the 2, 3, and 4. Will Barton's a 2 or a 3. MPJ is a 3 or a 4. Dozier, he's played the 1 through the 4 this year. Like, they just love all these like plug and play pieces, and that's absolutely part of their philosophy.
X-Men. Nuggets are like X-Men.
Yeah, I like that. I'll call them the X-Men. I also call them the United Nations team.
Oh, yeah. Serbia, Argentina.
That's another thing to connect the current Nuggets to San Antonio Spurs, the 5 championships, San Antonio Spurs, who had so many international players.
That's a good point. And, you know, you Michael Malone's close with Greg Popovich. Greg Popovich helped Malone get the job in Cleveland when he was an assistant during the LeBron years, during the first round of LeBron years. There is no doubt that the team building, the culture, the humor, the intensity, all of those things I see as comparisons to what they are doing in San Antonio. And obviously, if you can build around Joker the way you can build around Tim Duncan and win championships, like, man, people say that the San Antonio Spurs are the best franchise in all of sports. If the Nuggets can get anywhere close to that, it is a very promising future.
When you mentioned the United Nations, I remembered when we had a French guy, and we were in, there were rumors that we were interested about the Fournier, Evan Fournier. Do you know anything about it?
Yeah. I think that he was basically a part of consideration because the Nuggets were talking to Orlando. I don't think he was ever like the central focus of any trade talks, but I did hear his name in the lead up to trade talks and the lead up to the trade deadline. But to me, the guy who they always were interested in was Aaron Gordon because of the defensive prowess. That's why they got Aaron Gordon. Evan Fournier is a good shooter. I think he was averaging 17, 18 a game this year, efficient from three, but that wasn't necessarily what they needed. Like, the Nuggets offense was top three before they made the trade for Aaron Gordon. They needed to improve on the defensive end. So if that was going to be like a secondary component, like maybe, again, I had heard that there might have been interest from the Nuggets, but their guy was Aaron Gordon. They knew they were thin on the wing and vulnerable. That's why they went and got him. That's why they traded RJ, Gary, and a future first. You know, they hope that they can build with this guy. They have two cracks at it. Who knows if they're going to be able to keep him. But, I mean, even in talking to Aaron Gordon last game, like, he was like, I love this brand of basketball. I love how unselfish everybody is. Like, I love that everyone's playing, quote, the right way. And he's not going into a free agent year this year. But if he was, I would take those comments very seriously in terms of his basketball trajectory and coming from a place that wasn't conducive to getting the best version of yourself to the Nuggets, which is obviously it's kind of a mutual bet. Everyone thinks that they can get the best version of him with that trade.
So the Nuggets finally got their guy. I can't remember when was the last time that happened. Like, always we have to settle with a lower target, but finally we got the top target. So.
Right, right. And, you know, they were closer than people realize on Drew Holiday, you know, a couple times. And they tried hard to get Drew Holiday. It didn't happen. There was definitely disappointment. But a guy who would improve the defense. But, you know, like you said, they got their guy. It coincided. The Magic wanted – they were having a fire sale. They wanted to full rebuild. And Aaron Gordon was not a foundational piece in their mind. He's 25, had some injury history, had not necessarily elevated the Magic like they had hoped when they took him with the fourth overall pick. So it was time for a change. He needed to be motivated. And, you know, the Nuggets did their research. They did a lot of research on him, talked to former teammates, former coaches, to kind of get a sense of who he was as a player, as a person, and found out that he was eager for change. And that's what made the Nuggets more comfortable about doing this trade.
Amazing intel, amazing, you know, because it shows that Nuggets know what they are doing. You know, it's not just random. Okay, this guy could fit, let's try him out. I like that they are doing the psychological evaluation before committing to a trade or something.
You also reported that they did a hell of a intel on Aaron Gordon before signing him. Like they did so much research on him.
They did. They did do a lot of research on him. The Nuggets are not going – they were never going to invest that amount of capital in a draft pick. RJ, who they were very high on, and Gary Harris, they weren't going to invest that much for regardless of any trade. But when you give up that much, the guy who you bring in, who you expect can elevate you to championship level contention, better be the right personality. He better not mess up a locker room. Imagine if this had gone sour. Like, he's grumbling about role. He's grumbling about playing time. Like, he's not comfortable that Nikola, Jamal, and Michael are the top three guys, and he doesn't like that he's only going to average 8 or 9 shots a game 2 years away from free agency. Like, that could have gone sour. But now, Nuggets are 13-3 since the Aaron Gordon trade. That's the best record in the NBA. I tweeted this out. One of four teams to have a top 10 offense and top 10 defense since the Aaron Gordon trade, which obviously includes the Jamal Murray injury as well. It's the Nuggets, the Clippers, the Bucks, and then evidently the other championship contender, the New York Knicks. So it's been a pretty interesting month, to say the least, for Aaron Gordon's arrival in Denver.
How do you feel about the Knicks? Are they just like sweethearts of this season? Do you expect them to keep up, or maybe is this just some crazy aberration of their path?
I don't think it's an aberration. I think Julius Randle is really, really, really good, and I think Tibbs should get serious consideration for coach of the year. Serious. To me, it's Tibbs, Monty Williams, or Quinn Snyder. And those other ones, Quinn Snyder and Monty Williams, they had the infrastructure. Like, how much credit does Monty Williams get versus Chris Paul for doing what they've done with the Suns? Like, obviously, the Jazz were a really dangerous team last season. They probably should have beaten the Nuggets in the first round. Quinn Snyder has gotten the best version of them. But what were the New York Knicks? Like, for the last decade, what have the New York Knicks been? And Tibbs said, we're going to play Julius Randle. We're going to elevate and empower R.J. Barrett. We're going to resurrect D. Rose and bring back the Bulls days. Like, Tibbs is a grinding coach. He is a, like, no-nonsense, like, basketball lifer. And he has somehow molded something, like, working in New York. I could not be more impressed with what he's done with them. He's got them to buy in defensively. They have an identity. To me, if I had to vote today, I'd probably go Tibbs. But we got about 11 more games to go to kind of see how all the awards shake out.
Yeah. I love how Tibbs always brings D. Rose and Taj Gibson with him wherever he goes.
No, I just say, Taj Gibson, one of my favorite players in the entire NBA. And I'm not talking about players. I'm talking about people. He was one of the first people who I ever had, like, just a rapport with, a good engagement with. Like, I used to go to the Bulls locker room and I would just chat up Taj Gibson. And we would have, like, really just honest, good conversations. And I was like, I always just appreciated Taj for doing that. And now when I see him on the road, I'll say what's up to him. When he used to be in Minnesota, he would come say what's up to me on the media bench. So I've always liked Taj Gibson. I think he's like, I just appreciate the way he plays and the way he goes about his business. I know he's not the best player and I know he's past his prime, but I'm a big Taj Gibson fan.
Oh, I cannot say that. I remember Minnesota game, basically playing before the plane, he made a steal or something.
Right.
But yeah, I mean,
I'll say that was while I was working for USA Today and I wasn't covering the Nuggets then. So
yeah.
Yeah. That's the game.
That's like he broke our hearts, you know.
I know.
Yeah, but that game brought Michael Porter Jr. to Denver. So
yeah.
You know, win some, lose some.
It's a great point.
Taj Gibson, thank you in our name, actually.
It's a great point. I will convey that to Taj next time I see him.
Excellent. So when you mentioned Taj, are there any players that you had a special connection with?
Yeah, there's a couple players who I'm good with. Jay Crowder on Phoenix. I covered him in college when he was at Marquette. I was on Marquette for one season, and they went to the Sweet 16. He won Big East Player of the Year that year, and so – every time I see Jay, he's always super cool. We chat, and he's always been very nice to me. And then mostly just a lot of the Nuggets guys. Like, I feel like I have a very good relationship with pretty much every guy on the roster. I feel, you know, like I can level with them pretty honestly. Monte, like I mentioned, is one of my favorite guys on the team. Nicole is awesome. Just like, you know, it's been really difficult this year because you're not seeing these people in person and you can't just have a chat with them that's not recorded in front of 25 people on a Zoom. Like, that part is difficult. But, you know, once we get back to regular in-person access and I can go to the locker room, like, I feel totally comfortable going up to Nicola and talking about horses. Not that I know anything about horses, but just leveling with him. Will Barton is an awesome dude. Gary was great. He and I talked a lot about football and college football. Paul Millsap, he and I have a pretty funny relationship just because I like to irritate him. I like to go up to him and ask him to do interviews, even when I don't necessarily need to talk to him, just because I know he hates doing them. And so then I like to mess with him a little bit. And I think he appreciates it on some level. So, yeah, I'm eager to get back in the locker room and have – you know, work on these relationships. There's a phrase, you need to water relationships. You need to see people and talk to people and joke and, you know, just talk shop with them. And we haven't been able to do that this year, which has made it really challenging to give a lot of insight. But fortunately, I have like some background with these people, with the guys on the Nuggets that I can say like where they're coming from, where their head's at, I can reach out to them individually on a few occasions, and I can talk to them and see where they're at. So I can't imagine if this was my first year on the beat, how difficult it would be trying to form a relationship. It would be brutal. No other guys really jump out across the league right now. Like, Crowder and Gibson, those were kind of my guys. And obviously, like I said, a lot of the Nuggets guys as well.
Having said that, what were your first impressions of Nikola Jokic when you started covering the Nuggets in 2018? What was the first thing you noticed?
I was trying to just make sense of him. That's part of it. It's funny because it's part of the reason I think that people are, I don't know if people are still skeptical about the MVP and that he's the front runner. But to me, you need to watch Nikola on a nightly basis to appreciate what he does and all the things that he contributes to the offense, even if it's not evident in the box score. So when you start watching him on a nightly basis, you just start noticing funny things that, like, you know, him reading defenses that are, you're just like, how did he do that? Or him, like, he hustles to get every inbounds pass as quick as possible to try to catch the defense sleeping, or like funny things like that he does with his teammates, like his pregame routine. You know, when all the other guys have like crazy elaborate handshakes, Nikola walks down the line individually and just shakes hands. He literally shakes hands with every guy on the team. And that's it, except for Felipe Eichenberger, the strength coach, and he'll flex like right before going into the starting lineup. It's just like, Nikola's funny. Like, he's just really funny, and he doesn't care about himself in that he doesn't care about the numbers. All he wants to do is win. And like, that is, I've been around the NBA for about 5 or 6 years and like closely. And that is rare. It's rare to find any NBA player who is so selfless, let alone a guy of his caliber. So again, goes back to the Nuggets not wanting to take it for granted. Nikola's a special player. It was evident in 2018. It's way more evident now. The dude is historically good.
Before we continue, I would just like to say hi to Milan and Voya. They're our two other co-hosts who couldn't join us today, so they're saying hi to you.
What's up?
And anyways, so sometimes we like to spice things up with different segments to throw you the questions. So first segment will be fill in the blank.
Okay.
You have blank. To trust us. This says
I'm going to need you guys to translate. I'm not sure what dopuni means.
Fill.
Okay.
Fill. So first question is, the funniest moment from the Nuggets press conference was ?
Let's see. There was a few really good ones. I've had some funny interactions with Jamal. I had obviously the funniest thing that happened the other night was Faku saying MPJ was a terrible shooter, meaning a very impressive shooter. But apparently in Spanish and in South America, terrible is great. So who knew? I really liked it when I was asking MPJ about his defense, and I was kind of getting into, like, you know, where is this kind of surge coming from and this level of engagement coming from? And Porter came back at me. He was like, I was just tired of people like y'all saying I don't play defense. And I thought that was a hilarious answer. I love that he like broke the fourth wall and he like pointed me out. It was funny. And it is very hard to elicit authentic interactions, and we got one, and so I appreciated that. For the most part, I think all the Nuggets have been pretty accommodating. I think Malone is pretty hilarious when he's in the right mood. There was a St. Patrick's Day moment that was fantastic. Like an Irish reporter popped on, and he and Malone went back and forth. Malone's Irish, obviously, went back and forth for like a minute talking about Malone's Irish history. And it was just like, what is happening right now? We went off the rails, but that was pretty fantastic.
Okay. When the bubble happened last season, you were the only Nuggets reporter there. And when you found out that in the middle of playoffs, you will be just joining the Nuggets in Orlando, your first feeling about it was...
My first feeling. Wait, is this the question? This is not the question. My favorite memory from the bubble, right?
No.
He changed, I've
mixed it up a bit.
Okay. My first feeling about going to the bubble, I was so excited, even though I had 7 days of quarantine sitting in front of me. Like, I got out of my room for 10 minutes a day throughout the first week in Orlando. I was so excited. Because at that point they were about to face the Lakers in the conference finals. They had already made NBA history. They'd come back from multiple 3-1 deficits. And I just thought that this is a storybook run for the Denver Nuggets, and to be there, to be a part of it. And again, to see the people that I had covered closely on a daily basis and not be able to interact with them on a personal level, to have that opportunity, I was overjoyed. I was thrilled at the Denver Post. They found a way to send me. I was thrilled at the NBA for approving me. I was fighting hard behind the scenes to try to get approval and permission to go by the league from my outlet. And I was very appreciative. That was maybe the first thing that came to mind was, okay, sweet. Let's see what the Nuggets can do. Unfortunately, I was only out of quarantine for 5 days before the Nuggets lost, but it was a hell of a 5 days.
And now, what was your favorite moment in the bubble?
So two came to mind. First of all, when I was talking about being in quarantine and not being able to leave my room, I left for 10 minutes every single day for a week. The first player that I saw, I'm walking to like the place to get tested. It is just like a generic hotel room to get tested. And I see this like 7-foot giant, like taking like 3 steps for every one of my steps. And I'm like, who is coming towards me? Like, I can't see that far. I finally get out of my test and I'm walking back. I have like 100-yard lead on this guy within like 10 seconds. He's standing next to me. And I look up and it was none other than JaVale McGee. Was the first player that I saw in the bubble. And it was just me and JaVale on a sidewalk. And I said, what's up, JaVale? Like, I was like, you're going to laugh. Like, I'm here covering the Nuggets for the Denver Post. This was in the midst of the Western Conference Finals. And I think he just like grunted at me and was like, cool. And then he just kept it moving. So I was like, okay, that's my bubble initiation. And then I think the best part was getting out of quarantine. The Nuggets had practice that day. They had just won game 3, so they were down 2-1 at that point. Oh, no, game 3 was AD. Is that how it went? AD hit the 2, then they win game 3. That's what it was. And they win game 3. I had just gotten out. Everyone's in a good mood. And so I get to go to Nuggets practice, and it's the first time I've seen these people in 60, 70-plus days. And – I'm not going to say they were excited to see me, but they weren't. They didn't hate to see me. Like, Malone was like, oh, it's nice of you to show up. And as if it was my choice. And I saw Jamal, said what's up to Jamal. I saw Nikola walking down a hallway and I, jogged up to him. I was like, Nikola, like, good to see you. And he was like, oh, brother, what's up? And so, it was just kind of, again, those authentic personal interactions that you get that you can't get over Zoom. That was my favorite part. Just being able to see the guys, and just like level with guys and just have honest conversations. Like, that part was awesome.
Okay. Let's just jump really shortly in the pre-bubble period. Can you tell us before the coronavirus hit, who was the loudest guy in the Nuggets? In the Nuggets locker room,
the loudest guy. Maybe I'll say before the trade, it was either Will or Malik Beasley. Beasley was pretty loud. He and Will were always putting on music. They always controlled the music in the locker room. And I think one time they put on like Jill Scott and were like jamming to Jill Scott. That was pretty hilarious. So. They don't have a ton of loud guys, but Malik was relatively loud. I'll go with him.
Okay. So to continue, we will go to the next segment, which is called Miro Stats, where our Miroslav will share some fun stats he was playing with.
Yes. One thing. We are we owe to our viewers in Serbia, because I don't know if you know this, Mike, but Serbian fans were not really high on Michael Porter last season and early in this season as well. And that's also the cultural thing, because we are used to guys getting good much younger in Europe than in the
NBA.
Speaking
about it.
So in the NBA at the age 22, 23, you're still very young. You're still really developing. And this is not something we are very used to in Europe. Usually by the age 22, you're already finished product. So I will just give everybody a little breakdown of Michael Porter's stats before and after the All-Star break. So before the All-Star break, his offensive rating was a bit lower than 118, which is actually awesome. But his post-All-Star offensive rating is crazy. It's 120, 123. Defensive rating stayed pretty much the same at 112. But you can see that his net rating is almost double comparing to before the All-Star. Also, he slightly increased his assist percentage, meaning that now 5% of all, possessions end up in his assist, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And also his assist to turnover ratio increased to 1.07. His true shooting is through the roof. Do you know a modern player that shot 68.8% true shooting that's not called Steph Curry in 2015 or something like that?
Right. I don't think so. I mean, what he's doing is, I believe, like, for a second-year player or a 22-year-old player to shoot, I think he's shooting over 45%, around 45% from three at his volume. I think it's unprecedented. Everybody wanted him to make the leap. And, you know, even before this season, I was talking to various people with the Nuggets, and they were kind of saying, if we determine that Michael Porter has the ceiling that we all think he has, and he proves it, then this season will be a success. Like, if we go back to a year ago, what did we know about Porter? It was all potential. Now it's been realized. Like, the post All-Star numbers are a testament to a higher role, obviously more usage, more confidence, obviously the injuries. But he's coming into his own. If you remember in the pre-All-Star, he had the health and safety protocol. So he missed a significant chunk of time that hurt his rhythm, that hurt his chemistry, his budding chemistry with Nikola. And again, there were so many injuries that they were dealing with as well. Will was trying to get back. Jamichael and Paul were both injured. So there was just a lot of moving parts. This post-All-Star version of him, he has kind of emerged as clearly their number two guy in the wake of Jamal's injury. And I think that it is extremely exciting kind of thinking about what he is in the future. And this is why the Nuggets were so hesitant to even consider talking about Michael Porter Jr. in any trade discussions. Like, forget it, that Bradley Beal was not available at the trade deadline and that Washington wanted to keep him. The Nuggets are very high on him. They love who he is as a player, and they love his work ethic. Like, I hear it all the time. The dude is a gym rat. He just loves basketball, and he's like a goofy kid who, sure, he's put his foot in his mouth a couple times and said some things that he shouldn't have said. But for the most part, he's just a great kid who I talked about this on the Denver Post podcast with Brian Windhorst last week. Like, there's a possibility that he reaches a max extension this summer. That's what we're talking about with Porter here. Like, let's not kid ourselves. He's that good and has proven he's that good. And talk about taking things for granted. Michael Porter is healthy. That is so important. And no one realized, like, this is like a pinch yourself thing. He did not play in college. He missed the whole first year. And you don't even think about the injury concerns right now with how durable he's been and the minutes that Malone's given him. So I think that, like, again, going back to my conversations earlier in the year, if they learn that Michael Porter Jr. can be a foundational piece, the season was a success. Now, obviously, the ceiling got raised because of how good they are. But Porter, we know, can play, and we know he is a significant piece in the future.
Yeah, also what's crazy about this high true shooting number is the fact that he increased his usage from 19.4 to 22, and this is number that's actually keeping increasing because there is no Jamal Murray for the rest of the season, so this number will go even higher, and it will be really interesting to see if this true shooting keeps up. Another thing I wanted to show you, per 36 minutes, so he increased his points per game, points per 36 minutes from 18.5 to 24, which is amazing. His rebounds stayed approximately the same. The assists got slightly better. Now, steals and blocks got a bit worse. That's really a small sample. It's just if you have one game with three blocks, that will completely change. And the plus-minus, raw plus-minus, really interesting. Well, not raw, per 36 minutes, increased from 4.5 to 8.7. And just one more screen about his shooting. So we can see his field goal percentage, his normal field goal percentage, going up from 50 to 57.5. Three-point percentage going from really excellent 42% to 47%, which is completely crazy. And his 3 points made per game are now almost double, at almost three pointers a game, which is just insane.
Yeah, completely crazy. That's a good way to put it. One thing I've noticed from Porter recently is that he is almost actively going inside to start games. He's like playing from the post. He's using his size. He's forcing mismatches. He's driving downhill and he's not settling. And I think that it almost just sets a foundation and gets him his rhythm in games when he goes inside first and then builds outward. I mean, Michael Malone said it the other night. If he has his feet set, he's a deadly shooter. If he doesn't rush it, if he's on balance, if he doesn't even necessarily need a window because he's so tall, but when he has his feet set and he comes around screens, or he is the beneficiary of two or three passes on the wing, he is deadly. And like, you just expect it to go in. So he's like, I don't know how many more levels he could go to on the offensive end, but there's a real chance he's going to be an all-star level player next year. And I do think his defense has improved. I think his awareness, his engagement, even his blocks, he's had like a couple like chase down pin blocks the last few games. I just, you know, I think that the sky is the limit for him. He has tapped into that potential and has proven like that maybe one of the best draft picks the Nuggets have ever made at 14. And he's just making all these teams that passed on him, particularly the Clippers, who I believe had two picks before the Nuggets. They're just making him eat crow. Yeah. And, you know, it's a cool story. And again, this was the kind of thing the Nuggets needed to hit on if they were going to contend in a mid-tier market. And they hit, like, they hit big with Porter.
Okay. Thank you for the answers. We are now ready. Thank you, Miroslav, for the stats. We are ready for the next segment. It's called Shtapiesh. What it would mean, like, what you're drinking, but in USA, it's more common to say what you got, you know, something like that. So I would give you the question with a few options, and then you would pick one of the options give your coffee. Own option.
Yeah, it's early. It's early in Denver.
Early.
It's just noon. So first question. Why is Malone not playing McGee? Is it because he's saving him for the playoffs? He wants to do some front court experiments, or he just trusts more to the guys who have a longer Nuggets tenure?
It's a lot of things. There's a lot of layers to it. Paul Millsap, been there for 4 years. There's some loyalty there. Jamichael Green, they went out and got him free agency, and he was told there was going to be a certain role for him. JaVale McGee, they trade for him at the deadline. He's a three-time champion, and Malone needs to make sure that he doesn't undercut his value and undercut his voice in the locker room. So I expect him to play kind of intermittently the last 11 games. I don't think he's going to play every single night. This is the most difficult thing for Michael Malone right now, is figuring out that front court and who's going to play. And nobody's really happy about it. Like, it's not an easy thing. Circumstances change. They needed a guy, a rim protector in JaVale, because he was providing, they thought he would provide more than Isaiah Hartenstein. Obviously, they traded to Cleveland. But there's not an easy playbook to try to keep three proud veterans happy when all three proud veterans deserve time to play. So I think Malone is definitely aware of the problem. It is a problem, because you're not going to just keep guys happy on the bench if Jermichael's playing 8 or 9 minutes a game, if Paul's playing 10 or 15. Like, that's not going to do it. And I tweeted this the other day. Like, if they face the Lakers, you better make sure that JaVale McGee is well aware of your defensive coverages, your offensive plays. Like, over the next few weeks, if it becomes more clear they're going to face the Lakers in the first round, I expect Malone to lean on JaVale more so than probably Paul Millsap, just because of how invaluable JaVale's size can be.
And JaVale is being a pretty good sport for not complaining. And he's like the first guy to cheer from the bench, and that's why you need to respect.
I agree with that. JaVale is, and it's funny because I think JaVale is actually one of the guys who leads the cheers, who leads like the before the game, they're like 1, 2, 3 Nuggets. Like, that's JaVale. And he's not even playing a ton. And to me, that's a pretty unique status to hold when you're not a regular guy, but people respect you that much. So Malone needs to be careful not to undermine that respect by continuing to bench him. But like I said, I think he's going to get a couple opportunities in the next few weeks.
We need to come up with some kind of safe word for you, because if we ask you something tricky, you can just say it. There is a good bit by Monty Python Flying Circus. When you don't know what to say, you just say splunge. Trust me, that's the safe word.
How do you say, remind me the Serbian phrase, what are we drinking? What's to drink? That's what I'm going to say.
Štapiješ.
Štapiješ. That's my safe word. Štapiješ.
Okay.
Štapiješ.
So now let's go back to Aaron Gordon. So why is Aaron Gordon not playing long minutes? Is it because he is on the official minutes restriction because of the previous injuries? Maybe Malone is afraid of jinxing yet another injury, or maybe he doesn't trust Gordon's outside shot.
I think that Malone is very careful not to overwork him right now. I forget what the number was, but he hadn't played a ton for Orlando before the trade. And so I think they're very weary of overworking him, especially now without Will Barton and without other ball handlers. So I think that you don't want to overwork him, especially because he's probably going to play 36 to 40 minutes in the playoffs, depending on who they play. Like, Aaron Gordon will be used like a ton. He has been struggling with his 3-point shot. I think he started to get it going a little bit last game against Memphis. But you know, it's kind of interesting because I think when Aaron got to Denver, he was trying to not step on Nikola or Michael Porter or Jamal Murray's toes, right? He was kind of trying to fit in and be, you know, he didn't want to be overly aggressive and come in dunking and showing what he could do. But now they need Aaron Gordon to be more aggressive. Like, the circumstances have changed. He is now probably their third most dangerous offensive player. So they need him to hunt. They need him to look for stuff in the post. I think those minutes are going to increase. I don't think he's on a quote unquote official minutes restriction for the record. But Malone has been very happy with him defensively specifically. And he's talked about needing to get him more involved in the offense. And that means Aaron needing to be more aggressive for himself, being in the post, on the offensive glass, in transition. All of those are areas where I think Aaron can find more pay dirt and more points. But again, this is a work in progress. He's 16 games into this roster which has had a revolving door of players around him. It has not been like a seamless, easy thing for him to figure out.
Okay, we've spoke a lot about Jamal's injury, how devastating it is for the Nuggets current and next season. So we won't spend too much time on that. But Will Barton's injury sounds pretty serious. It doesn't seem like something that will heal in a week or two. it might take him longer. What would you say the Nuggets during this period will miss the most from Will? Is it his vocal leadership, his playmaking, his huge confidence? Or you can take something else from the bar. I don't care. You can choose something else.
I thought you were going to say, when's he coming back? And I was going to say, stop, Yesh. And I'm just kidding. No, I'm just kidding. So I think they are going to miss Will's playmaking the most. You know, Will is one of the only guys on the team who can beat guys one-on-one, who can play downhill. And the same things that frustrate fans about Will Barton in terms of hunting for his shot are also what make him valuable. When the shot clock's running down, like, just give Will the ball and he has good length and he can get inside. PJ Dozier is kind of like a Will Barton light. I'm not saying he's anywhere near as good as Will, but he has a similar frame and kind of a similar cadence to how he plays. So I think they're going to miss the offense. And, you know, it's a shame for Will because he really, really wanted to play in this postseason. And I'm not saying that he's not going to. He very well could. Again, his timeline is pretty unclear. Hamstrings are really difficult to gauge when you're going to heal. It's kind of a personal thing. I will say I expect Monte Morris back before Will Barton. You know, in the next week or so, week or two, and the Nuggets can start to build something toward kind of their playoff roster. But Will is a big loss. He was probably going to be their third hub in the offense without Jamal, and now, like we just talked about, that's probably going to be Aaron Gordon. Which, can he play that role in addition to giving everything he's given on defense? We'll see. But Will, he put everybody in the right spot. Will was at his natural position with the two. AG was at the three. And then defensively, that just put everybody – like, it gave the correct assignments. So I guess we're scrambling again, and that's kind of what Malone and the Nuggets are going to try to sort out in the next 11 games.
So let's move on to the breaking news that you broke yesterday about the Nuggets finally a G League team. So can you tell us more details about it and what does it mean for the Nuggets organization?
I mean, it's a big deal. They've been trying for years to get a G League team. They finally get one in Grand Rapids. Obviously, it is not the next state over. It is not like a short drive away. But it is what it is. Like, they had tried to get one in Las Vegas, in Seattle, a couple other places, and it just didn't work. And finally, this one became available. It is basically a breeding ground for the Nuggets. They can send their assignment guys there, their two-way guys there, their young players there. They can get them in the same system. They can experiment. If you want to play bowl at the three, then you can play them at the three. If you want to play bowl at the four or the five, then try them out there and see if it works, and experiment and develop that skill set. You can develop, coaches down there. You can develop other staffers. So it's just kind of, you know, an extension of the Nuggets right now. And it makes their lives easier because they don't need to outsource their guys to other teams and hope that the coaches are going to play them. You know, like Dozier and Bol were with the Windy City, and Vlatko was, I think, with the Erie Bayhawks, and Jared Vanderbilt and Monte were with the Rio Grande Vipers. And like, that's a lot of different systems. And like, you know, the Nuggets, they used to tell you, yeah, like, teams are very cooperative and they help us. But like, I'm sure that was frustrating. I'm sure that was very tough to, like, you know, figure out, can I send a guy here and guarantee that he's going to get 25 minutes a night and really play consistent basketball? Now you can guarantee it. Now you have a pipeline. So it is very much kind of a cool win for the Nuggets. And I think it was probably a little bit of a shameful thing that they didn't have a G League team. Like, the majority of the NBA, 28 teams now have a G League team, not including Phoenix and Portland. So it's pretty significant news. And I think people are just, especially if you can't play bowl, if you can't find bowl any time up here, send him to the G League and let him work, just so you can at least continue that development and production.
Okay, last question. Before the playoffs, who do you want the Nuggets to face in the first round? And who do you think they actually will?
I think they would rather face the Mavericks. You know, obviously, like Luka-centric, and it's one guy, and they actually love the defense that Aaron Gordon plays on Luka Doncic. So I think that they would much rather face the Mavericks than the Lakers. My guess is they end up facing the Lakers, and who knows? Like, who's going to be healthy for the Lakers? What kind of rhythm are they going to be in? Are the Nuggets going to be able to match that size that they have in their front court? What role does Michael Porter play as the number two option in offense? If he can do those post All-Star numbers that you just posted, you know, the Miro stats, then the Nuggets could maybe get to the second round and maybe upset the Lakers. I don't think that that's out of the realm of possibility. But the other thing is if they get the Mavericks, if the Mavericks sneak up, because I think the Mavericks have like the second easiest schedule remaining in the rest of the season, if they sneak up to the five, you have that 4-5 matchup. Then you have the 1-4 matchup, which is either Utah or maybe Phoenix catches them. And like, I mean, who's to say what would happen in that series? Nikola Jokic has had his way with Rudy Gobert. So, I mean, every time you think like rationally, I should write the Nuggets off or assume that they're not going to – this is like they're not capable because of circumstances out of their control. Like, they reel off wins. And, you know, they're 6-1 since Murray went down. And they're – you know, they have the best record in the NBA since March 1st. They're 22-6. Like, they have a lot of resiliency. And I'm not going to be the jackass that says they're not going anywhere in the playoffs, because I think they might shock people. I don't think anybody is excited to face Nikola Jokic, MVP favorite, in the first round of the postseason.
Yep.
Great. And to thank you for coming, we decided to teach you some Serbian words to get you extra points on press conferences with Jokic. And since Miroslav is the professional Serbian speaker, he will teach you a few things to say. Easy stuff.
Yeah, Miroslav's Serbian is terrible. So you can imagine we speak the same language. We just call it two different names. So first things first, when you come to the press conference, you just say, ciao, Nicola. No need for ciao, Nicola. Yeah, we use the Italian one.
Okay, I can do that. That's easy.
And then when you finish with him, you don't say thank you, Nicola. You say hvala, Nicola.
Hvala?
Hvala.
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 Hvala. Hvala, Nicola.
No, wait. So you know how is the easiest thing to remember? So, you know, Australians have koala bear. And here in Serbian and Croatian, just take out the K and put the H. So it's hvala. Hvala.
Hvala. So, hvala, Nicola. Hvala.
Excellent. Yeah.
Excellent. I think he will appreciate if you like greet him with ciao Nicola and say hvala Nicola at the end.
Okay.
And we would like to teach you it's Nuggets Nation from this part of the world slogan. It's basically let's go Nuggets, but in Serbian it's idemo Nuggetsi.
Idemo Nuggetsi?
Excellent. Idemo Nuggetsi. Excellent. Right.
Got it. Idemo Nuggetsi.
Yeah.
Either one I could see. Mike, thank you for coming. It was a pleasure to speak with you. You're basically doing everything. We just needed to drop the ball on you, and that's it. So thank you for coming. It was a pleasure.
Of course. It was awesome. Igetse Nuggetse. I butchered it.
You know how demo you remember? I wrote it down how it's easiest to remember. So, you know, demo, like demo version of something. Then yes. You just put E in front of demo and E after Nuggets. E, okay. Demo, Nuggets, E.
Idemo Nuggetse. I got it.
Idemo Nuggetse.
Yeah. Thank you,
please,
Mike.
Please tell us, how did Nikola react to your Serbia?
Will do. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have
idemo Nuggets.
Nuggets Serbia, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. Zvonce, stisnite, like, share, komentar, MySpace, na blogu, u novinama smo sutra, gledajte naši. To je to. Pam, pam.